Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth drama.
All right, all right. Welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word. And I'm joined by my illustrious co-host, Miss 100%. And tonight, although it's not live, we have a taped interview with author of the book Breaking Free, Alicia McCullough. And if you want to holler at us, you can give us a call, 646-929-2037. Once again, tonight we have author of the book Breaking Free, Alicia McCullough. The call-in number is 646-929-2037. We encourage you to go to our Smooth Drama site so you can get to know us, see how crazy Miss 100% really is, and how calm, cool, and collected I am. Also, you can social network with us on Twitter. I'm Smooth Drama. My yearbook, Facebook, tag, I'm Dick Hugger. Add me, I'll add you back. But I know, as I talked before and I say over and over again, you ain't really trying to hear me. You're trying to get at my illustrious co-host, Miss 100%. Tell them where they can catch you at.
Well, they can find me always on Twitter. At 100% number one, and then 100% spelled out. Miss 100% spelled out at yahoo.com and Facebook. Miss 100% spelled out again. Why do I do that? Because I like seeing my own name. I'm just stuck up like that. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway.
All right, Miss Stuck Up.
And I just got one question. Why I got to be the crazy one? Why can't I be cool, calm, and collected?
Because you just said it.
Okay. Don't
right.
We'll leave it like that.
Cool, calm, and collected. In Ohio, a Westchester, Ohio apartment complex is going to the next level of the game to get dog owners to clean up after their pets. They sent letters to all their residents informing them that since no one wants to clean up their dog waste, every dog needs to submit to a mouth swab so the apartment can collect DNA, and they will be checking the DNA from the poop to your dog, and if it's your dog, you will be fine.
They, you know what? I bet you a whole bunch of jobs for a maintenance crew just opened up. I can see them now. Fuck this bullshit. I ain't about to got me messed up. I got to pick it up and analyze it. That's a degrading job.
Well, supposedly it's going to go through a private company, but somebody's still going to have to pick up.
The maintenance people still going to have to pick it up.
Well, they have to do that anyway. That's part of the job. So it's not like there's a nice part of picking up dog stuff.
Well, that's true. Well, since they're not going to be the ones that have to analyze it, test it, or whatever, I just can't understand why go through all of that to begin with. I mean, it's shit. It's fertilizer.
Well, because it's unsanitary, for one.
But what I'm saying is, I understand all that, but I'm saying, why go through all of that just to find out who's letting their dog shit and not picking it up? I mean, is it that big of a problem? Like, is cows of shit just everywhere? Or, you know. And then who's going to pay for it? I bet you, nine times out of ten, they're going to put it on their rent. They're going to pass it down to all of the residents, and they're going to have to pay it.
Well, what's happening is the owner of the dog, who is the one in question, is going to pay $200 per violation. And any future residents or residents right now who decide to get a dog would have to pay an extra $50 per dog to cover the cost of the program.
Please.
So, yeah, it has trickled down.
Yes.
Funny how that goes, huh?
Yeah, a bunch of ridiculousness. That's all it is. Just don't allow pets.
Well,
they already have pets. So I guess.
Yeah, you allow pets at the same time. It kind of is the fault of those who don't pick up after their animals.
True.
I mean, because you think that's the reason why we have toilets. Because can you imagine the chaos if it was just, you can drop it like it's hot anywhere?
And you know what? There's a joke in there. I can imagine a person not liking this thing, and then they take a big old crap themselves and just leave it there.
Well, I'm trying to think of the Jim Carrey movie where he did that, where he had the split personality.
Oh, gosh.
Myself, and Irene, or something like that, where the dude had let his dog do it on his lawn.
Yes.
Went and dropped it.
A big old deuce on his lawn.
Yeah, this is what it is.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and speaking of deuces, the funny thing, and I tell this story every now and again, when I first started doing Smooth Drama, established the account, you know, get the email going, my first email was from a guy named Peter James. Peter James promised me $30 million. All I had to do was give him my bank account information. I didn't give him my bank account information. I sent him an email back like, hey, give me your information so I can give you my information. Surprisingly, I never heard back from Peter James.
Really? It was a surprise, really?
Yeah, I'm really hurt by that. So when I saw this next story where a woman, an Australian woman, scammed Nigerian scammers, who had a car sales website where they were scamming people for the money. I guess they would send their money to get a car, and it was supposed to run through a bank that she was set up to funnel the funds and keep 8% and send the other 92% to them cats. Mm-hmm. Only she took the whole 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which ended up being about
$33,350. Okay.
Yeah, and so I mean, I'm not mad at her, even though she did have to do She got charged and pled guilty to one count of aggravated fraud. Oh my God, I can't.
It's okay. Just relax.
So aggravated.
Tell the voices in your head to be quiet so you can sleep. No.
Anyway, yeah. So big ups to Ms. Ramsey.
Yeah, I haven't gotten my money either. I'm the long lost descendant of. Three people who died of cancer. Well, two died of cancer, and one died in a horrible car crash. And unfortunately, they couldn't find any other relatives, but they found me. Mm. And I was supposed to get all these millions of dollars. And all I had to do was send them an email with my name and address, and I would get my money. I wrote an email back asking about the people, more information about the people, but of course, you know, I didn't hear from anybody, so no, I guess I won't get my million.
Yeah, I think that was Peter James' cousin, Leroy.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, talking about crazy scammers, what's up with this? I don't know if you've seen it. All over the country, this so-called new Nike Foamposite Galaxy shoe, which is, get ready for the colors, purple, blue with white specks. It's supposed to be some space theme, and it costs $220, and folks is rioting. They had to call in the police because these fools is up all night waiting to get a crack at this shoe. Now you tell me that ain't crazy.
But you know, there's a Nike shoe that I believe is $1,500. It's a Air Jordan, and it's $1,500. Of course, nobody's fighting over that.
Well, no, that's what they're doing. They were in line to get these shoes so that as soon as they get them, they can sell them as a signature sportswear, as a collection, and they marked them up to like $1,000 on eBay.
Wow. That's just crazy.
Yeah, I'm like, you're really gonna pay $1,000 for a pair of shoes?
I don't get it. Some people do though. I mean, it's not Nike, but women pay $1,000 for their shoes.
Well, intelligence is on call.
Yeah, I mean a $10,000 bag. They're buying purses that's actually almost $11,000 for a bag.
Intelligence is on call, because I promise you. I mean, and then I always get more offended because 95% of these cats don't play ball. I can't get past that. Why do you want tennis shoes and you don't play ball?
90% don't play ball, and 65% can't actually afford them, don't have jobs. And you know it's income tax time, so a lot of baby's mamas is giving their boyfriends money to go out and buy these shoes. It's a sad story.
Yeah.
Because the more I think about it, the more things I start to think about that are just despicable concerning the story. And you know, I don't want to say it, but you know, it's probably not that many people that are.
Yeah.
Racist. You don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get you.
Full of color just don't use common sense when it comes to me.
Tennis shoes. Once again, my common sense is if you don't play basketball, you should not be buying basketball shoes.
Right.
But that's just me.
Right.
Anyway, speaking of something that I guess is supposed to happen 2050, we're going to have a space elevator. Where it's a Japanese company that is near completion on what they call a Tokyo Sky Tree. It's supposed to have an elevator that can take people some 22,370 miles above the Earth.
And then where are they going to go?
Well, supposedly it's going to take them to a space station that's going to be anchored above the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It may sound a little crazy, but it kind of sounds to me like they're building this and they're planning on bombing a whole lot of countries.
Well, look at it like this. The early plans call for it to be equipped to carry 30 people traveling at 125 miles per hour.
This gonna take a long time to get up there.
Right, a single trip is gonna take over a week. Now think about this for a second.
Who the hell gonna be in an elevator for a whole week? Who wants to do that? That's crazy.
I agree.
Oh God.
That's why I say it's ill. Ill-conceived. I mean, it must be a hell of an elevator. It's got to be a cafe elevator. It's got to have bathrooms, place to eat, rest, sleep.
Sleeping quarters. It has to have everything.
Yeah. Space station. And, I mean, it sounds like a terrorist magnet for me. It's like you are the king terrorist if you blow up the space station.
Wow.
Just saying. I'm not quite understanding the space elevator, and I guess it's not for me to understand.
Right.
So, on that note, we gonna go on a break before we play our interview. This is Mad Stally, 10 Lizzie Ford to a Rolls Royce boy.
Ride turns smooth, and the fast lane we cruise. Together, this life we didn't choose. From the get go, we never settled. Why should you? I used to be influenced by a hustler with a chain. Now I'm influenced by a man asking for some change. I used to pray for riches, now all I want is change. Like Obama, man, I'm trying to do the right thing for my mama's sake. She don't wanna see a son boxed in, confined in chains. My posse already did that, man. Filled with marijuana and cocaine veins. Now the chip off my old man. See these marks looking slowly pain right above my pillow. Dang. Man, how can we escape this lane? I'm telling my young folks, sometimes that coolness is really lame. See, I sat back and peeped the game. 20 years and nothing changed. I could've kept my diary blank and still maintained. Cause it's all the same. It's a recurring stress. I tried to step, I tried to rest. I never failed, so I'm next to this step. I'm playing life till there's nothing left. It's still hard even though I know the test. As long as I give my all and put my best, everything else, God bless. And like nothing's really hard pressed. I really address for my niggas with fear rubbing in their chest. We got it now, let's. Stop here while I'm thinking, cause homies are leaving and families are grieving. And I can't stop speaking about what I'm seeing. I wanna pop out and throw one around for no apparent reason. So express my wealth, cause I'm from the hood and I like to live good. I just choose to speak and do well when it's time to express myself. It's time to express myself.
Drama. Thank you for joining us. Dick Hugger and Miss 100%. That was Mad Stally, 10 Lizzie Ford to a Rolls Royce boy.
Yeah.
And, oh, go ahead. Let's go ahead and go into the pre-recorded interview with Miss Alicia McCalla, author of Breaking Free.
All right. Bringing on to the stage, we have author Miss Alicia McCalla. How you doing, man? Welcome to Smooth Drama.
Thank you for having me. Well, I appreciate you guys bringing me on.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. It's a pleasure having you.
Now, I want to ask you, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of authors out there, and the generic question is why you want to be an author. And as a black woman author and talking about doing like sci-fi urban fantasy, that's kind of rare. What made you go that way aside from the normal romantic female
well,
author?
I started writing when I was maybe 10 years old or a little bit younger, and my first stories were always really wild and crazy. I was that kid. I was the nerdy kid in the classroom. I love science. I love art. I love writing. And it just came to me as I, you know, got older, and I would just read all those science fiction books, that it was just something that I wanted to do with my life. And it is hard because most African Americans, they think it's a little bit strange to do science fiction and urban fantasy, but it's one of those things that's close to my heart.
Well, that's the reason why I asked you that question, because as you know, the stereotype is the African American female writer author is writing love stories, not
yeah.
sci-fi.
Well, I do have love stories in my book, so I can't get away from that, because I do love my romance genre. And I'm also the member of Georgia Romance Writers. I'm on the board with the Georgia Romance Writers, so I do like love stories, but my real love or my heart really stems from the different stories, from science fiction and urban fantasy, paranormal. You name the weird stuff, I kind of like it. Well, you guys are still
going to
talk to me, even though you know I'm a little strange.
Hey, look here.
You're strange too, so, you know.
Yeah, please.
We fit here.
So you know, you are talking to one of the original, quote-unquote, black nerds.
Okay.
I am comic. I've been doing comic books and drawing since I was 5, so you're not strange at all.
All right, well, I appreciate that.
And now I'm part of the family because I wasn't always into sci-fi and, you know, paranormal and all that different kind of stuff, but Dick adopted me. So now I'm part of the family, so I write it home.
That makes me feel good.
So talk about Breaking Free and what Breaking Free is about.
Well, Breaking Free is actually, it's a teen story. So I wrote it for my high school students, and I'd say it's for those ages maybe 16 to maybe 21, and it's a story of a girl named XJ who has to save her mother from an evil mind swipe procedure. So in there, XJ is genetically enhanced, and she has to pull together or bring together her family, her long-lost cousins, so that they can become the ultimate weapon to bring down this oppressive organization called CAGE.
And we can use her right now, bring down some of these oppressive organizations.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely the story of revolutionary, and it's definitely dystopian, because CAGE is very oppressive. I have to say that I've mixed it up. So there's African Americans, but there's also white, and there's also in some of my upcoming novels, Hispanic Americans. So I try to make my stories multicultural, because as a school librarian, I work with a wide array of children, and what I found is that most of the science fiction books or dystopian literature, it just wasn't very multicultural. And so this is what I was trying to attempt with Breaking Free, to write something that no matter which one of my kids picked the book up to read it, that they would find themselves in my novels.
Meaning you write books for normal people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's
for the majority of people, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the point that needs to be stressed, because, you know, people talk like the what we've been used to is normal being
mm-hmm.
excluded, whereas you talk about just doing a normal story with normal people. doing extraordinary things, and it involves everyone.
Yeah, I think for the 21st century, that's very important. That's one of the things that I try to stress on my blog, is that fantasy, futuristic, and paranormal in color, except when you write multicultural, you're writing for the 21st century reader. A lot of times, we have these segregated worlds when we look at fantasy, futuristic, and paranormal, where the worlds are mostly just, you know, white worlds. And that's kind of hard for me because it's almost like saying that African Americans or black people are not a part of the future, or not just blacks, but all people of color. That we're not a part of that imagination and that creativity and that discussion. And I think that's just wrong on one level. But on another level, I think that writers owe it to the public to show what's out there today. You know, to show that we're all there, that all parts of humanity can be a part of the science fiction dream.
Well, I've always thought that's the reason why reading has declined, because it's not that people don't want to read. People are tired of reading the same thing that is not inclusive of them.
Right. Yeah.
So fantasy, futuristic, and paranormal, which one? Which one is your favorite? Which one would you pick if you could only write about one?
Oh, my God. you're cruel. You know what I have to say? It's hard because my first, you know, Breaking Free obviously is legitimately science fiction, or what people would call science fantasy. And I really am a science fiction kind of a girl. I like that at the very base. So I'd say science fiction would come first, and or fantasy would be right after that.
Well, see, I told you 100% is cruel and oppressive. She wants to box you in. She don't want you to spread your wings or nothing. That's what I'm talking about right there.
I know. It's so hard for me. It's hard to make a decision about which one I really like. And it kind of depends, too, because, I mean, fantasy, futuristic, and paranormal, that's like Thai food versus Chinese versus you like them all.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So in coming up as an author, who influenced you, like, I had to pick this up, these are the books that I had to read? What was Alicia reading coming up
when I was a teenager?
Yes, ma'am.
You know what's so funny? My favorite person of all was Douglas Adams. Mm. I was so into Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I was reading all them stories and Sapphire, Beeblebrox, and all, you know, he really did it for me. But there are some of the other greats that I like. I love Marion Zimmer Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
I love Anne McCaffrey with her Dragon Riders of Pern, and Piers Anthony. So I guess those are kind of science fiction, fantasy folks.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I got into college, I started, you know, because I would read so much science fiction. I just read it to everybody. And then something happened in college, and I just stopped reading. I think it's like what you were talking about. I just didn't see myself represented. And that's when, I think I want to say my senior year in college, I found Octavia Butler.
Mm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I absolutely fell back in love with the genre. And I just read, I think I read everything she had. I think she said that she was like the most published black woman science fiction writer. And I read everything. I just loved it.
Yeah, and I think that serves that the point that I made, that people read when it's something that's important to them and they can see themselves in the story as opposed to being excluded.
Yeah, I think Octavia Butler was the first time it ever dawned on me that you could have a black woman protagonist in a story like that. It never even occurred to me that it was possible. And that's sad because, like I said, I was in college by then.
Yeah. Well,
why do you think African American authors shy away from this particular genre of writing?
Well, I have to say that historically, in the Africana diaspora, we have always told stories of the supernatural and the paranormal.
That's right.
I think that we tell them, but it doesn't come under the term science fiction.
Okay.
Maybe you might want to call it magical realism. Maybe, like, for example, today we have Read Across America. That's a big thing at elementary schools. And the school counselor was reading Mufawar's Beautiful Daughters. And this was a story about two girls, that one was vain and one was really kind. And in the end, they were going to marry the king. And the king, in the end, he didn't show himself at first to be who he was. He came as a snake, and he came as a young boy with elf ears, and he came as a woman in the woods. And then in the end, he finally revealed himself. I hope I'm not ruining anybody's plot, but he finally revealed himself, but he did it magically. And he selected the kind daughter based upon how she treated each one of those characters that came to her. And so I guess what I'm saying is Mufawar's Beautiful Daughters, that is definitely steeped in that African tradition, and it's a story of magic, basically, or what do you call it? Shapeshifting.
Yeah.
Shapeshifting. Okay.
Well.
Okay. So that's paranormal.
Right.
But nobody would ever call it. You know, we never would call it such a thing.
Well, I mean, it's like mythology. When we look at and I think, you know, the authors have shied away from this because they don't understand the audience. I mean, I go to comic book conventions all the time, and I see a lot of black people. I don't see a lot of black authors.
Right.
I mean, and I think that is the disconnect, because the black author doesn't go where the people would be. And they don't understand that there is a huge audience.
There is. Well, I have to say, though, as a librarian, one of the things that I have noticed, like, when I get ready to buy something, like, I have some kids, they only read horse books, or they only read dog books, or whatever. And as a librarian, I will go out and buy that. And so what ends up happening is publishers are like, oh, you know, this librarian is buying up 25 horse books. And so then the market kind of drives that way. And right now, what's really hip in the African American community is urban lit. And so you just have all of these publishers, they kind of come out with, I hate to say it, it's the same in the hood story.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like, well, can we get something else?
Right.
Well, but that's what people are buying.
Well,
and so sometimes
you tell the same story about, you know.
I've stopped paying attention.
Yep. And that's what kind of happens. So the people who, you know, the people who might buy something different or who might be interested in something different, they never see it there, and they're wondering, well, how come? And so I guess in answer to your question, in some ways the market kind of drives what you see. The good news is with digital publishing and with the way that things are changing, that people can go out and they can create communities around the things that they really like.
Right.
And let me just say this, if you really think that there's a hole, you got to get out there and feel it.
Exactly.
You need to be writing your comic book.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm talking about. And that's why we were privileged to have you on, because I always look for people who fill the void.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just look into the hole and say, wow, that's a really big hole. It's messed up.
Right.
And so, now, I know you had been involved in the event, the State of Black Science Fiction 2012. You want to talk about your involvement in that?
Sure. What would you like me to tell you? Like, what it's about, or you want to tell me how?
You can talk about what it's about, you know, why you wanted to be involved in it. I have my sneaking suspicions why, but it probably come better from you.
Well, I hate to say this, but in, I think, October or November, I was just twittering around, and I'm a member of the Black Science Fiction Society, and something just hit me. Yes. Mm-hmm. Something just hit me, and I was like, you know, it would be really nice if we did something during February dealing with Black Science Fiction. And that's the extent of my great brain child. It was like nothing in particular happened. It just felt like something that was right to do. And so I went on sometime in December, and I posted on the Black Science Fiction Society, and I asked if people would just be interested in kind of thinking about these questions or just kind of discussing the state of Black science fiction in the way that we discuss politics or the way that we discuss the world today. Because I was feeling like, you know, there's not an avenue for such things. And also, because I work in the school system, we always have the same thing for Black History Month. Sometimes I get tired, like, okay, I love Carter C. Woodson.
Yeah.
But I want to do something a little bit different.
Yeah, can
and,
we talk about,
you know,
more than three
since
people?
Since we have the blogs and so many of us are out there and we're talking, I thought it would be nice to just do a corporate blog dealing with the fate of Black science fiction just for this year of 2012.
Yeah. Well, it's a leap year, and it is the last year of our life, according to a whole lot of doomsayers, so might as well get it in now.
You know what? You can't just wait on nobody else.
<That's> right.
You got to get out there.
Okay. If we're going to go out in 2012, we might as well go out with a bang.
Go
right?
Big. Make it big now. Make it big.
Well, I mean, I want to commend you for doing that, you know, writing and not waiting for somebody else to do it, you know, doing it. And before we have you go, tell the people where they can catch you if they want to read your magnificent blog as well as catch your book.
Okay, you guys can find me on www.aliciamccullough.com, and that's aliciamccullough.com. And my books are available just about anywhere that there's booksellers. So I have them in digital and on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes. I do want to give a shout out to my 18-year-old, Asante. He actually wrote the theme song for me for Breaking Free called Keep Moving.
Okay.
And that's also on iTunes for download for 99 cents. And people can find that on my website if they go there and visit.
All right. I want to thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I look forward to reading your book. I will be downloading it here in the next few days. So.
You know what? Now, when your audience, when they come in, do they ask questions or you just kind of let them hear the interview?
Well, they will hear the interview, but they also will be in the blogs asking questions and whatnot.
Okay, well, if you find one person out there that you think has asked an excellent question about either me or the State of Black Science Fiction 2012, I will be willing to give them one free copy of Breaking Free. I can sign it and send them to the snail mail, or if they want a digital copy, I can do that too.
Do I count? I can answer questions.
Oh, you guys are wonderful.
All right. Well, you take care. And hey, anytime you got anything going, feel free to hit us up. We'd love to have you on again and talk about anything else you have going, any other projects. And I want to be involved in the next State of Black Sci-Fi discussion.
Well, hopefully we'll be having one because everybody was so, the authors who are a part of it, they're so excited about it. I think next year we're going to try some different questions and try to dig a little deeper. So it should be good.
All right.
So you're ready for State of Black Pride 2013.
That's right. I'm ready.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank
you. Take
care. Have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. And that concludes the end of our interview with Miss Alicia McCullough. Gracious host. And the book looks, sounds awesome. I can't wait to get my hands on it in between then and now, though. We're going to.
Yeah, so they better call in with questions or email questions because, hey, if they don't, I will.
100 trying to snake your book. You got a question, you better get it out there real quick. She got snake in her.
Wow. That's so crazy. That's so
crazy. I don't mean it like that. Anyway. We all go on break here. This is Poor Righteous Teachers. Rock this funky joint.
Rapidly. The RC posse backing me. Easy now, star. You know exactly who we are.
With Big Hugger and Miss 100%, that was Poor Righteous Teachers, Rock This Funky Joint. And you really took me back by playing that song.
Oh, that was it's funny to think that was like 20 years ago.
Yeah. You took me back, homie. You took me back.
Yeah, I almost started doing the WAP there. I had to slow my roll. I had to stop myself. speaking of stopping myself, Senator Constance Johnson of Oklahoma has, because she's mad about a personhood bill. And I don't know if people have heard, there's a bill called the personhood bill, which would force women to listen to the heartbeat of a fetus before going through with an abortion. So what Senator Johnson did, she wants to say that any man who ejaculates or otherwise deposits semen anywhere but in a woman's vagina shall be interpreted and construed as an action against an unborn child.
Wow. That's something else.
Yeah.
And I totally feel her. That's because that is really cruel. You know, it's almost as if you're trying to punish a woman by making her listen to, you know, her unborn child's heartbeat. Or, you know, it just, that's just so cruel.
Yeah. It's a tough issue, obviously. For the obvious reasons, but once again, it goes down to the issue of the government telling people what they can do with their bodies.
Right.
And I think categorically, I cannot go for the government telling me what I can do with my body.
Mm-hmm.
No, and we know that if this law went in the hand, we talking about prison overpopulation.
Right. I mean, they might as well lock up 95% of America.
Mm.
All American men. Sentences for men.
Yeah. It's just for men.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And speaking, well, this ain't just for men. California, I guess now is being required those who represented on the judicial bench, they're requiring all their judges and justices to reveal their sexual orientation. And this is according to reports from the Weekly Standard. It was an internal memo that was sent to all California judges and justices. So, to make sure gays and lesbians are adequately represented on the judicial bench.
That's the biggest bunch of malarkey I've ever heard in my life. I just see it as a way to start a witch hunt. That's all it is. I see people being, you know, just totally mistreated because of something like this. That a sexual orientation has nothing to do with being a fair judge, with being, you know, someone who, you know, plays by the rules. That has nothing to do with it. Why not require all judges to give drug tests every week?
Well, I'm for, you know, when you hold public office, I think that you should do drug tests.
But they don't. So that's what I'm saying. They're worrying about something that is of no consequence to anybody. I guess they're trying to say to make sure that, you know, they're doing an adequate or fair, you know, job when they're judging certain types of cases. But that I don't even see that as a problem. You know, it's the bigger problem is judges favoring attorneys, you know, and it has nothing to do with sexual orientation.
Right. I don't give a damn about sexual orientations or what their racial configuration is.
Right.
What are their policies? Who do they support? How do they rule? That is number one. And I know there are people who will say the other way, like, well, hey, well, we have to be adequately represented. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds good in theory, except for we know here in America doesn't quite work that way. You'll get one of something, and then everything else will be the dominant, quote unquote, majority.
Right.
Kind of how that goes.
Then the next thing they're going to do is start requiring teachers to do it. And, you know, before you know it, everybody is going to have to, you know, say, you know, give their sexual orientation, make that public knowledge. And it's a bad thing. It's all bad.
Yeah. It's the politics of the issue. We're talking about policy and they're talking about sexual orientation.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, so if they're gay or lesbian on the bench, does this mean that their policies will be what? Right. I'm not getting what that's supposed to mean now. So right. But I mean, it that doesn't make any more sense than I read that there was a survey over in the UK and it said that black and mixed ethnic Britons are less satisfied with their lives on average than the UK population as a whole.
Well, they're in the fucking UK.
Well, I don't think that it mattered where they were, because I'm thinking, if you poll all over the world, you can get black and mixed ethnic people to say, yeah, we're less satisfied with our lives than the populations on the whole, pretty much everywhere.
Actually, it's funny that you said that, because there was a study that was done and they talked about it today, where they were saying that African American women are more sexually satisfied and lead happier lives than Caucasian women. And they were talking about whether or not body types and weight issues had anything to do with it. And they raised a very, very important point when they were saying that black women have learned to accept who they are. We've learned to accept, you know, how we're built and our makeup. We've learned to accept the circumstances that we're put into, and we learn how we flourish regardless of the situation that we're put in. We play the hand that we're dealt. Whereas women of other races, if they don't know poverty or don't know struggle, then you know, of course they're going to lead more stressful lives because they don't know that. They don't, you know.
Well, I'm like this. I don't think that has anything to do with it. It depends on who's giving it to them. At the end of the day, being happy in your social status, what your living conditions are, I mean, they play a slight part, but who is giving it to you and how good it is. I'm thinking if you go across the board, there'll be some women, regardless of racial composition, who will say, yeah, I'm getting it good. And then there'll be some who are like, yeah, I need somebody who's going to give it to me good.
Well, not just the sexual part. They were just saying overall, they found in a study that African-American women are more satisfied with their life than other women of other races. And they were just saying, you know, sex and the social status and things like that played a big part of it. Because
I have to ask, who the hell did they ask?
They didn't ask me.
Yeah, because I'm like, hold on a second. You're really, and I guess these are zenned out people who they have become one with the universe, and they're cool doing their yoga every day. Last time I checked, the majority of black folks, well, I won't say majority, but you can say 30-40%. Are under the poverty line disproportionately.
But remember what they said. Here's the thing. When you talk about the economy, a lot of, and I don't want to sound prejudiced or racist or anything, but a lot of white people start flipping out, oh my God, we in a bad economy. And black people are like, well, hell, the economy has already always been bad for us. So what is there to stress over? It's, you know, we know struggle. We learn how to get by.
So, but you know what? Statistically speaking, there are more white people who are poor than black people. I think these people that they show on TV, that's the reality. There are more white people who are poor than black people. But the point is disproportionately we're poor as opposed to there are more of them being poor. Numbers wise, but the issue is the people that they show on TV are people who were living a facade of a life anyway. They thought that they were at a point living the quote unquote American dream, which does not exist per se. I think that is the issue. That's not focused on in any of these studies. What's the quality of life and what's the reality of life? Because I don't care about people's perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
It's about where they really are. I mean, as someone smart once said, you can have a guy living in his mama's basement with a $60,000 car think he's rolling.
Right.
And on that note, I want to thank our guest, Ms. Alicia McCullough, for coming on the show. I want to thank you, Ms. 100%, for being the great co-host that you are. Shout out to the bloggers out there, Chocolate, showing us some love on the blog tip. For Ms. 100%, I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N word, and we're Smooth Drama. We out. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast. Smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together, you guys.
Smooth. Drama.